Welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission today is really unpacking the hidden everyday dangers of driving in Westchester County and New York City.
Right, the kind of risks that are just sitting there in plain sight.
Exactly. And we're going to be analyzing the legal playbook you need if, heaven forbid, the worst happens to you out there on the roads.
Yeah, it's so important to have that plan in place before you actually need it.
Completely. So we're pulling our insights today from an advisory briefing provided by the law offices of Norman Gershon. And their team analyzed a specific real-world crash to highlight some really massive systemic risks on our local roads.
And not just the risks, but the specific rights you have when things go wrong. Because, I mean, let's face it, things go wrong out there all the time.
They really do. So we're using this document to explore the actual mechanics behind why certain intersections are so dangerous, plus the physiological and legal aftermath of a severe crash.
Right. And the specific strategies their firm argues are absolutely necessary to navigate the whole claims process in New York, which is notoriously tricky.
Yeah, tricky is an understatement. So to start, let's just look at the incident that sparked this entire briefing.
Okay, let's get into it.
Usually, when you think about a police officer on duty getting hurt, you picture them responding to some high-speed emergency. Right, like lights flashing, sirens wailing.
Oh, for sure. You expect inherent danger in that specific scenario.
Right. But recently, an on-duty police officer in Yonkers was literally just assisting with a local charity event.
Wow, just a community event.
Yeah, exactly. It should have been the most routine, safe community presence imaginable. But instead, it turned into a trip to the hospital in the absolute blink of an eye.
And I'm guessing it had nothing to do with like chasing down a suspect.
Nothing at all. It had everything to do with a single vehicle pulling out of a driveway.
That is just, it's chilling, honestly. A highly trained motorcycle officer taken down in a fraction of a second on a completely familiar road.
It really is.
It completely strips away that illusion of safety we all sort of carry with us when we commute every day.
Oh, absolutely. And this single incident kind of acts as a magnifying glass.
Right.
We aren't just looking at one unfortunate afternoon in Yonkers. We are looking at a daily epidemic.
An epidemic that stretches across the entire region, really.
Yeah, from Yonkers and White Plains all the way down into the Bronx, Queens, Manhattan, everywhere. So the details of the crash are honestly chillingly mundane.
Mundane is the perfect word for it. It's the stuff we do every single day.
Right. So the officer's on a motorcycle near Warburton Avenue. A vehicle makes a left turn out of a driveway, right into his path, and boom, collision.
Man. And what were his injuries?
The officer suffered injuries to his hand and knees, got transported to a local hospital, and, thankfully he was
Well,
stabilized.
that's a relief. It could have been so much worse.
Oh, definitely. It wasn't life-threatening, but it completely highlights a phenomenon that traffic safety experts and legal advocates call the left turn trap.
The left turn trap. Yeah, that is consistently one of the most common and dangerous types of collisions out there.
So why is that? Why is a simple left turn so incredibly treacherous?
Well, the advisory breaks it down, and the mechanics of that trap are actually deeply rooted in human cognition. It's about visual processing.
Visual processing. So it's not just people being reckless.
I mean, sometimes it is, but a lot of the time, drivers frequently fail to yield the right of way, not out of malice, but because of a failure to accurately judge the speed or distance of oncoming traffic.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the human brain is actually remarkably bad at calculating the closing speed of an object moving directly toward it.
Especially, I'd imagine, when you add in the environmental pressures of these specific local areas.
Oh, for sure. The congestion makes everything worse.
Like driving on busy corridors like Warburton Avenue or, I don't know, the Bronx River Parkway.
What do you say?
Or just navigating the gridlock of local NYC streets. It feels like you're playing a high-stakes video game with terrible lag.
I love that analogy. A video game with terrible lag.
Right. Because the driver making the turn, they think they have the timing perfectly calibrated. They see a gap, their brain registers go, but there's a literal lag between their perception and the physical reality of the oncoming vehicle's speed.
Exactly.
And because of that lag, their misjudgment just creates an immediate, unavoidable brick wall for the oncoming traffic.
Your video game analogy maps perfectly onto a visual phenomenon known as the looming effect.
The looming effect. What's that?
So when a driver looks for a gap to turn left, they are subconsciously scanning for the wide rectangular profile of a car.
Okay, that makes sense.
Their brain uses the rate at which those two headlights expand in their field of vision to calculate the speed of the vehicle.
Oh, wow. So if it's not a car.
Exactly. A motorcycle, however, has a very narrow profile, and it usually only has one headlight.
Right.
So it literally doesn't trigger that same looming warning in the brain. The turning driver can look right at the motorcycle, but their visual cortex fails to register it as an immediate threat until they're already pulling into the intersection.
That is terrifying. You
Right.
can be staring right at someone, and your brain just filters them out as a non-threat.
Yes. And then you add in driver distraction, like, glancing down at a phone for even half a second at a busy intersection.
Yeah, everyone does it, sadly.
And suddenly, the oncoming driver is left with virtually zero time or space to react.
And the physical consequences of that visual processing error, I mean, they are wildly disproportionate depending on what you're actually driving.
Oh, completely. It's not a fair fight.
Right. If you're in a car, you have a crumple zone, you have a reinforced steel cage, multiple airbags, seatbelt pretensioners, all this stuff designed to absorb and distribute kinetic energy away from your vital organs.
Yep. Modern cars are incredibly safe.
But when the oncoming vehicle is a motorcycle, like it
Yeah.
was in Yonkers, the vulnerability multiplier is just off the charts.
Because riders lack any structural protection whatsoever. I mean, flesh and bone versus 2 tons of steel. Even at speeds of 20 or 30 miles per hour, which sounds slow, the human body is simply not designed to absorb the kinetic energy of a vehicle turning abruptly across its path.
Yeah, the physical toll detailed in the firm's data is pretty harrowing.
It includes severe trauma. We're talking shattered joints, compound fractures, degloving injuries, which is commonly known as severe road rash, and it's horrific.
Ugh, yeah, I've heard that is incredibly painful and takes forever to heal.
It really does. Plus, soft tissue tearing and highly concerning outcomes like traumatic brain injuries and long-term disability.
And, surviving that physical trauma is obviously the absolute priority. You're just trying to live. But the advisory points out a secondary hurdle that appears almost immediately.
Right, the legal and financial battle.
Exactly. The moment the dust settles, this psychological and corporate battle begins with the insurance industry. And the brief specifically calls out a massive systemic bias against motorcyclists.
It's true. Insurance adjusters are heavily trained, I mean, heavily trained, to look for any opportunity to shift the blame away from their policyholder and onto the victim.
And they use stereotypes to do it.
Absolutely. They exploit societal biases against riders to save their company's money.
Wait, I have to stop you there. Because my brain is having trouble computing the legality of this whole thing.
I get that a lot. It's confusing.
If a car makes an illegal left turn directly into a motorcyclist's path,
Yeah.
right? Like pulling out of a driveway when they clearly, objectively do not have the right of way, how does an insurance company legally justify blaming the rider?
Because you're
I
assuming.
mean, it seems like physics and basic traffic laws make it a completely cut and dry situation.
Right. You're assuming the claims process is a search for objective truth or justice.
Well, yeah, isn't it?
It really isn't. It is a risk mitigation exercise for a giant financial institution.
Okay, that makes sense when you put it that way.
In New York, the law operates under a system called pure comparative negligence.
Pure comparative negligence. Okay, what does that mean in plain English?
That means a jury can assign a percentage of fault to everyone involved in the crash.
Wait, everyone. Even if someone pulled out right in front of you.
Yes. If the insurance company can convince a jury that the turning car was, say, 90% at fault, but the motorcyclist was 10% at fault for, I don't know, failing to take proper evasive action.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Failing to evade a car that just jumped out in front of them.
Exactly. If they can pin 10% of the blame on you, the insurance company gets to reduce their financial payout by 10%.
Unbelievable.
Then over tens of thousands of claims across the city, shaving off 10% here and 20% there, that saves these corporations millions and millions of dollars.
Okay, so they aren't even trying to prove their driver was completely innocent.
Not at all.
They're literally just trying to muddy the waters enough to save some cash on the settlement.
Precisely. They lean heavily on the subconscious stereotype of the reckless daredevil biker.
Right, the guy weaving in and out of traffic.
Exactly. Even if the rider was doing the speed limit perfectly safely, the adjuster will argue they must have been speeding, or they must have been weaving, or inattentive.
That is so cynical.
It gets worse. They will actually use the extreme severity of the injuries to retroactively suggest the rider was acting recklessly. Like, oh, you wouldn't be hurt this badly unless you were driving like a maniac.
That is incredibly messed up,
Yeah.
blaming the victim for getting severely injured by their client.
Yep. They will scour the police report for any ambiguity whatsoever to leverage that comparative negligence against you.
Well, that makes the moments immediately following a crash in Westchester or NYC absolutely critical, because you are dealing with physical shock. And simultaneously, this invisible corporate machine is already spinning up a narrative against you.
A narrative you don't even know is being written yet.
Exactly. So how do you actually protect yourself? The advisory lays out a really clear 5-step survival guide for the immediate aftermath of a crash. And digging into the mechanics of these steps reveals exactly how you counter those exact insurance tactics.
Yeah, let's walk through it. Step one.
Step one is calling 911 immediately.
Which sounds obvious, but people hesitate. They think, oh, we can just exchange information. Do not do that. Establishing an official, independent record is your first line of defense against a rewritten history.
Right.
You absolutely need law enforcement on the scene to document the exact positions of the vehicles, to take statements while the adrenaline is still high and people are actually being honest before they realize they're in trouble.
Yeah, before they have time to invent a story.
Exactly. And you need the police to issue citations if traffic laws were broken. A police report officially stating the other driver failed to yield is a massive piece of armor against that comparative negligence argument we were just talking about.
Okay, so that's step one. Step two is seeking medical care. And the text really emphasizes doing this even for injuries you might consider minor at the scene.
This is huge. The biology of a crash explains why this is totally non-negotiable.
Right, because of shock.
Yep. The moment of impact triggers your endocrine system to flood your entire body with adrenaline and cortisol.
Fight or flight.
Exactly. These are incredibly powerful evolutionary painkillers designed to help you survive a traumatic event.
Wow.
So you might stand up, brush yourself off, and genuinely believe you are completely fine.
But you aren't.
Often, no. Soft tissue damage, micro tears in ligaments, severe whiplash, or even really dangerous things like slow internal bleeding. Those might not actually manifest pain symptoms for 24 to 48 hours.
Wow. And if you decline an ambulance at the scene, or if you wait 3 days to finally go see a doctor because your neck starts hurting, the insurance adjuster has their opening.
That is exactly what they're waiting for. They will argue that the delay in treatment proved your injuries weren't actually caused by the accident. Oh, you must have hurt your neck at the gym.
Yep. Or they'll claim you are exaggerating the severity for a payout. You essentially hand them the evidence to devalue your own claim.
Man. Okay. Step three is documenting the scene with photos.
Your smartphone is your best piece of forensic evidence. Hands down.
Take pictures of everything.
Everything. You want wide shots showing the entire intersection layout, the weather conditions, any obstructed views like overgrown trees or parked delivery trucks. And of course, you want tight close-ups of the vehicle damage.
Okay, and step four is gathering witness information, which ties perfectly into how I like to think about an accident scene. It is essentially a rapidly degrading crime scene.
Oh, that's a perfect way to look at it.
Right, because the physical evidence vanishes almost immediately. The cars get hooked up to tow trucks and dragged away. Fluid spills or skid marks get washed away by the fire department.
Yeah, the scene gets cleared as fast as possible to get traffic moving again. And most critically, the rubberneckers and the Good Samaritans, who saw exactly what happened. The ones who saw the car cut you off. They get back in their cars and they leave.
Yep, they have places to be.
If you don't lock down their names and phone numbers immediately, those independent accounts just evaporate.
And without those independent witnesses, the claim inevitably devolves into a he said, she said scenario.
And who wins that?
The insurance company. That is exactly where they want it. They absolutely thrive in ambiguity.
Which brings us to step five. And this feels like the pivot point in this entire survival guide. Speaking with an experienced car accident lawyer before you ever deal with the other driver's insurance company.
This cannot be overstated. The insurance adjuster is going to call you usually within 24 hours of the crash.
And they act super nice, right?
Incredibly friendly. So concerned about how you're feeling. They will politely ask to record a brief statement just to, you know, get the facts straight.
Do not do it.
Do not do it. Their representatives are highly trained professionals using leading questions designed specifically to trick you into admitting partial fault.
Like getting you to apologize or something?
Yes. Or casually saying, yeah, I didn't see him until the last second, which they twist into you being inattentive. Or they get you to downplay your injuries because you say, I'm okay, out of politeness.
Wow.
An attorney acts as a firewall. They handle all the communication, so the insurance company cannot trap you into a recorded statement that destroys your case later.
That makes total sense. But the advisory goes further, though. It argues that the actual type of lawyer you hire is a major strategic decision.
Right. It's not just any lawyer with a billboard.
Especially when dealing with the highly congested, really litigious battlegrounds of Westchester County, White Plains, Yonkers, and the boroughs of NYC. They make a really strong case for utilizing a local legal heavyweight, which leads right into the specific credentials of their firm, the law offices of Norman Gershon.
Right. And the core of their argument here is all about leverage. The advisory heavily emphasizes Norman Gershon's 35 years of trial experience.
Why does trial experience matter so much to the insurance guys?
Because in the legal ecosystem, trial experience is the specific metric that insurance companies monitor most closely. The industry distinguishes between two types of plaintiff attorneys. You have trial lawyers, and then you have what are colloquially known as settlement mills.
Okay, a settlement mill being one of those high-volume firms that signs up hundreds of clients, does the bare minimum of paperwork, and then pressures the client to accept whatever lowball offer the insurance company throws out.
Exactly.
Just so the firm can collect a quick fee and move on to the next file.
You nailed it. And the massive insurance conglomerates, they actually use claims evaluation software programs like Colossus that literally track the trial records of specific attorneys.
Wait, they have algorithms tracking lawyers?
Yes. They know exactly which lawyers have never set foot in a courtroom. If you hire a settlement mill, the algorithm factors in that your lawyer will eventually blink. They won't go to court. So the software spits out a much lower settlement offer right off the bat.
That is wild. But the advisory uses a phrase to describe Norman Gershon that changes that whole algorithmic math. It states he is the lawyer other attorneys call to try their toughest cases.
Right.
It claims that insurance companies know and fear experienced trial attorneys.
And that's the concept of deterrence. Taking a case to an actual jury trial is incredibly expensive and risky for a massive insurance corporation.
Right, because juries are unpredictable.
Exactly. It exposes the company to open discovery, expensive expert witness fees, and the totally unpredictable nature of a jury verdict. If the attorney sitting across the table from them has a verified track record of refusing to back down and actually taking cases to verdict, the threat of a trial is credible.
The algorithm knows he won't blink.
Exactly. The insurance company is suddenly highly motivated to offer a fair maximum settlement up front, just to avoid the courtroom entirely.
And the firm points out a really great structural financial safeguard for the client here, which is the contingency fee model.
Only pay if you win.
Right. You don't need a massive, you know, $10,000 retainer to send a heavyweight into the ring for you. The firm absorbs the financial risks of investigating the crash, hiring the reconstruction experts, and building the case. You only pay if you win.
But a fearsome reputation is honestly useless if it isn't backed by hard data. The advisory provides specific, verified outcomes from the law offices of Norman Gershon to really substantiate their strategic claims.
Yeah, let's look at the receipts here. Looking at these figures gives us a very clear picture of what a successful trial deterrence strategy actually looks like in practice.
The scale of these victories is significant.
Totally. The data highlights a $16.5 million verdict for an auto passenger against a bus in the Bronx.
$16.5 million. That is massive.
We're talking about taking a case all the way through a trial against a major transportation entity with vast defense resources and a jury awarding $16.5 million. That requires an airtight, undeniable reconstruction of the crash physics.
They also list a $14.5 million settlement in an MTA bus accident in Queens.
Wow, another huge one.
Securing a settlement of that magnitude, a settlement, not a verdict from a massive public authority, indicates that the defense knew their liability was undeniable, and they knew the plaintiff's counsel was fully prepared to dismantle them in court, so they paid out to avoid trial.
Makes sense. There are also multiple verdicts exceeding $5 million in multi-vehicle crashes. And highly relevant to our breakdown of the left turn trap today, they highlight a $2.5 million verdict specifically for an intersection accident right here in Westchester.
Which proves they are navigating the exact local jurisdictions and the exact mechanical failures we've been discussing today. It's not abstract for them.
Not at all. And beyond the numerical data, the advisory includes qualitative feedback, you know, client voices that highlight the real human impact of managing that rapidly degrading crime scene we talked about.
Yeah.
Testimonials point to just meticulous preparation.
Yeah. What do the clients say?
A client named Nancy Joyce noted that Norman, quote, worked his magic and got me a bigger settlement than I expected.
Love to hear that.
Lance from New York described him as confident, prepared, and top-notch in the courtroom. And Anthony Mangino summarized the whole approach by saying he leaves nothing to chance and fights for your rights.
Leaves nothing to chance. That phrase right there. That is the exact antidote to the insurance company's tactic of thriving in ambiguity.
Oh, absolutely.
It requires investigating the scene, tracking down those Good Samaritans before their memories fade, pulling traffic cam footage, consulting biomechanical experts to prove exactly how the kinetic energy shattered a writer's knee.
Right, leaving no stone unturned.
It's about removing every single shadow of a doubt, so the insurance company literally has nowhere left to hide.
And knowing who to call before the chaos happens is a huge part of this survival guide. The advisory provides their direct contact, and I'll share it here. The law offices of Norman Gershon can be reached at 914-485-1444.
It's definitely a number to have saved.
Yes. Again, that number is 914-485-1444. It's a critical resource to have securely stored in your phone. Because as that Yonkers motorcycle crash so vividly illustrates, none of us get to schedule our emergencies.
We really don't. Which brings us back to the core lesson of this entire analysis today. A routine left turn out of a driveway exposes a profound daily vulnerability in our routines.
Yeah, let's recap where we've been. We've unpacked the cognitive lag that causes drivers to pull out in front of narrow profile vehicles like motorcycles.
The looming effect.
Yep. We've detailed the massive transfer of kinetic energy that makes motorcyclists so uniquely vulnerable out there.
We looked under the hood of the insurance industry, too.
Yeah, seeing exactly how they use comparative negligence laws and adrenaline-delayed medical treatments to literally devalue your life and save a buck.
And we've reviewed the strategic necessity of utilizing a battle-tested trial lawyer.
Someone with 35 years of experience, a history of multi-million-dollar verdicts, and a reputation that forces those insurance algorithms to recalculate their risk just to level the playing field.
Exactly.
If you find yourself caught in one of these traps, you can reach them at 914-485-1444.
So, as you head out on the roads today, consider a final thought. Every time you approach a busy intersection in Westchester or the city, watching a line of cars waiting to turn left across your path, realize that your physical safety relies entirely on a fragile, unspoken social contract with absolute strangers.
That's a wild thing to think about.
It is. You are trusting that their visual cortex registers your presence, that their brain calculates your speed accurately, and that they respect your right of way.
Right.
If a stranger's cognitive lag breaks that contract today, is your legal armor already in place to protect your tomorrow?